Good afternoon. Good afternoon. Please be seated. We are here on the matter of Shaner versus Shaner. This is case number 62498. Are the parties ready to proceed?
Yes, Your Honor.
Very well. Ms. Hudgens. I'm sorry. Ms. Doyle.
That's okay, Justice Sotomayor.
My sorry. My apologies. My sorries. My apologies.
Good afternoon, Your Honors, and may it please the Court. I am Carrie Doyle, and I'm here representing Gary Shaner, the father in this action, who 2 years ago requested that the District Court allow him to relocate with his two youngest children and reunite with his two oldest children here in Northern Nevada, in Reno, to attend school at UNR. This appeal presents a single, simple legal issue. What is the proper standard to apply to a custodial parent's motion to relocate within the state of Nevada? As the confusion and errors in the District Court demonstrate, this court needs to adopt a standard and a procedure, one that's clear both to the District Courts and to the numerous pro se litigants who frequent our family courts in Nevada. After adopting a standard, we ask the court to take the extra step of reviewing the evidence in this case, finding that Mr. Shaner met the standard provided in Schwartz for out-of-state relocation, and direct the District Court upon remand to allow relocation.
So you're asking this court to interpret a move intrastate in the same way that we would analyze an interstate move when the distance is Vegas-Reno.
Your Honor, I've proposed a separate standard that would apply no matter what the distance is for an in-state move, but I do believe that whether you apply that standard or the Schwartz out-of-state standard to all relocation motions, that in this case, Gary Shaner met his burden and demonstrated that he should be allowed to relocate.
If we apply that intrastate standard, what do you think the mile radius should be from your current location?
Your Honor, I actually do not believe there should be a mile radius. I think that if the legislature wanted to enact a mile radius, they could. States like Texas have. Mm-hmm. I think that allowing the district courts more flexibility and requiring moving parties, or it's funny because in this case I keep thinking moving parties, relocating parties, to demonstrate, the non-relocating party, in order to require them to demonstrate changed circumstances is more advantageous than putting a strict geographical limitation. That encompasses, it allows the court discretion to not hear motions that don't need to be heard. But, for instance, if you set a geographical limitation or an hour drive limitation or something, what about the non-custodial parent who relies on public transportation to visit their children? And then the custodial parent decides to move even within the same city or the same county, but to an area not serviced by public transportation. That change could have a substantial and pervasive effect on the non-custodial parent's visitation rights. And so by using the substantial change in circumstances akin to the first prong of Ellis versus Carucci, district courts would have discretion to hear a motion even if it's not a large relocation or long distance, but adjust that to the facts of any particular family within the state.
What do we do about the fact that there were no findings of fact made by the judge in this case?
Your Honor, there were some findings of fact made. I don't think that any of them were applied to a legal standard.
Any meaningful findings?
Your Honor, I believe that if you look at this court's precedent, such a record requires reversal. And the problem in this case with simply reversing and allowing the district court As the court may be aware, Judge Nathan was the district judge in this case, and she has since been replaced through election. So it would be a new judge hearing this matter. In this case, that would increase the delay. I mean, this father, this family has spent 2 years of uncertainty whether or not they can make this move. He's had to delay pursuing his education. So I would ask the court to look at the record as it's presented. I know that this court is not a court that does findings of fact. There are findings in the record, and the evidence in the record, as this court is accustomed to reviewing, find that the burden has been met in this case and allow relocation.
Is it fair to suggest that Mr. Shaner has delayed his education for 2 years when, in fact, the education he seeks is an engineering degree and he probably could at least attempt to gain that education at the University of Nevada at Las Vegas?
Your Honor, my understanding and the only evidence presented in this case is that Mr. Shaner wanted to concentrate in nanotechnology, a minor program that is only offered in Reno and not in Las Vegas. While the district court in Las Vegas did suggest, and I think we can all agree, an education at UNLV is very good and worthy of pursuit, this particular program is something that Mr. Shaner has been interested in since 1996, and that was the evidence that was presented to the district court.
What do you do? I mean, the delay is really of concern to the court as well. This came before the district court almost 2.5 years ago originally, if my memory of the record's correct. Yet we don't know what's happened in those 2.5 years. And unfortunately, the children at issue, I think one of them is close to, if not at, the age of majority. I appreciate what you're saying is we should cut to the chase under any standard your client should win. And I appreciate the advocacy that involves, but is that responsible for us to accept that invitation?
Your Honor, I understand your position and certainly gave that thought. Kathleen, the older of the two children who are still minors, my understanding is she's 16 now.
Oh, okay.
So she's not yet at the age of majority, but certainly there could have been things that have arisen. I do think, Your Honor, if this court entered an order allowing relocation, that would not foreclose a motion from the mother to further modify custody based on teenage discretion or any other facts that may have arisen. As much as I have stayed in touch with my client, I do know some things. I know those things aren't a part of this court's record, and I don't want to try and introduce facts here.
The test you're advocating for intrastate moves puts the burden on the non-custodial parent to demonstrate changed circumstances, yet the change is already implicit in the custodial parent's request to move, so there's a change in visitation. Analytically, that's a bit different. It's a bit difficult to grasp. I understand what you're saying as a matter of policy, because our statute only addresses moving out of state. And that's what the legislature has expressed itself on. And I see what you're saying, but how would you articulate that test and elide the point of the change in circumstances is, in this case, the move from Las Vegas to Reno?
Your Honor, there are certainly several things that could contribute to a finding of changed circumstances. And as I was addressing with Justice Gibbons, I think if a parent is trying to move down the street, there aren't going to be changed circumstances, Your Honor. But there might be if that move constituted a change of school district or it constituted a change of the quality of the neighborhood and the non-custodial parent's fear for safety, or moving in with a significant other that the non-custodial parent had questions about. Of course, none of those things are at issue in this case. But I believe that having the non-custodial parent have to demonstrate those changed circumstances properly places the burden on them to show either that the relocation is such a great distance or has some other logistical issue with it that substantially and pervasively, which is how you have to affect visitation to justify changed circumstances, that way this court and the lower courts and now the Court of Appeals are not hearing several motions about changing to a new apartment in the same building, hopefully.
And before you move on, I wanted to ask if you wish to reserve any time for rebuttal. We are just about to cross your five-minute line.
Thank you, Your Honor. I did ask to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal and thank you had them set the bell. Thank you. The second step of that test, Justice Pickering, I believe is what would be more relevant in a case like this one. I think even though Ms. Shaner did not present evidence that this was substantially and pervasively affect her visitation, in all likelihood, a move between Reno and Las Vegas is pretty hard to maintain weekly visitation. I think, and the standard that we've proposed allows the consideration of the best interest of the child as the second step. And that consideration must be in the context of the relocation jurisprudence. It has to not just be the best interest of the child solely. As in Schwartz, this court announced that that courts need to balance the best interest of the child, certainly, the best interest of the custodial parent, their freedom of movement, and the interest of the non-custodial parent in maintaining visitation. In Jones, this court announced that you can't consider the best interest of a child without considering the best interest of the parent they live with. Having a parent who wants to pursue a new career or pursue an education should be taken into consideration in that best interest analysis, as it wasn't here. Unless Your Honors have further questions, I'll reserve the remaining time for rebuttal.
Thank you so much. Ms. Cook, would you stop the clock for a moment because I want to ask a procedural question. Because I butchered the announcement of your appearance to begin with, I want to be certain that I do it again when you come on for rebuttal. Do you prefer to be Ms. St. Clair Doyle or just Ms. Doyle?
It's just Ms. Doyle. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Mr. Kennedy.
Good afternoon, Your Honors. Todd Kennedy on behalf of Respondent Pilar Shaner. May it please the Court. Both sides agree that the NRS 125C200, the interstate removal statute, and the cases applying it do not directly supply a rule of decision when we're talking about a within Nevada move. But that does not mean that a parent whose current timeshare qualifies them to have primary physical custody. And of course, this Court has defined there's two different types of custody, physical custody and legal custody. The parties here shared joint legal custody. Does not provide them an unfettered right to unilaterally decide to remove the children and move them hundreds of miles away from the only environment they've known, the only climate they've ever known, the only schools they've ever attended, the only friends they've ever had.
What are your thoughts, counsel, on the model that we could look to in the state of Texas, where they also have geographic distances that make it very difficult for relocation to consider the shared custody and visitation arrangements between parents? Do you think we should adopt something like that?
I do not, Your Honor. I would agree with my opposing counsel that I think geographic limitations creates a standard that does not allow the courts the flexibility to truly drive down into what this Court has said in many of its decisions is the real issue in any custody determination, which is, of course, the best interest of the children. Is there changed circumstances? And then once that has been established, and I don't think there's any real dispute that a change moving the children from Las Vegas to Reno certainly impairs visitation rights in a pervasive and substantial way, particularly given the economic situation of the parties of this case who have struggled financially for quite some time. And I believe that when you have a determination which requires a change of circumstances, and then the focus is down to what is in the best interest of the children, which of course is what the district court did ultimately analyze in this case. The appellant has proposed a standard that really espouses a position that the move, that's taken it as a given. That there's really no one has anything to say about that. And the courts and the parent who is now being deprived of that relationship, that close, very substantial weekly visitation with those children, they're just left to pick up the pieces and adjust as best they may. But I don't believe that the court's cases that it already has. Really, they provide a different answer, one that we don't need to create an entirely new standard, and we don't need to worry about the different aspects of going out of state, because I think the court has commented that the legislature's concern there had a lot of different issues, including preserving jurisdiction, the constitutional right to interstate travel. In this instance, the court has, in its decisions, has focused it down really to when a parent wishes to change the stability of the children and change the status quo, they bear the burden of establishing there's a change in circumstances and that change that they wish to impose is in the best interest of the children.
No, I'm going to ask a question that may not have a legal or a legally cognizable response. But one of the things that the two parties in this case seem to have done right is to be able to, at least up to this point, raise kids who have an equal, loving relationship as between both parents. We also have children here who are clearly verbal and able to, I think, express their desires. If we're talking about best interest of the kids, how come the kids just can't make the decision here?
I wouldn't disagree with Your Honor that I believe they are able to state their preferences, and in fact, they did. In fact, one of the context here I think is important. The facts of these cases get so specific. These are parents of four children. Two of them are adults and are attending college and doing well by the evidence that we have before us. There was a child interview of the two minors took place, and the reports, as reported by Judge Nathan, were these children were happy, reasonably well-adjusted, reasonably successful in school. There's never perfect. They can always do better, of course. And they liked the fact that a year prior, Judge Nathan had increased the visitation with their mother. They expressly, and it was very clear, they did not wish to have less time with their mother. In fact, they both commented that it would be nice to have a little bit more. And in that context, you're looking at a situation where it would be impossible for that level of relationship, a mother who wishes to be involved. In fact, this is a mother who started out every other week and has constantly pushed to have more visitation, more time with her children, and has maximized, used every possible day she can possibly get, and was certainly on record with saying she would like more, and the children would like more.
But the fact is, she is not the primary custodian under the existing court order. The father is. And it's sort of a zero-sum game. I mean, I understand what you're saying. She would like this, or he would like to pursue his career dream. And I think the cases are not so focused just on what the children want in this point in time, but on the welfare of the whole family and the proper balance of the state in people's lives. And there's like a whole complex of factors here. So to me, with due respect, I can't just say what the children may say in an interview with the court should control. I'm concerned we don't have a statute that treats this. It's a policy-laden issue, but if you have primary custody, don't you also have the right, indeed the obligation, to provide the home for the children, the primary home, and that stability that goes along with it? There are instances where a person needs to move in order to improve or continue that family, and that pays a price on the non-custodial parent, and so you try to adjust by maybe extended visitation in the summer. There are other options, but it seems to me this court just said in the lower court, he wants to move, I'm not going to let it happen.
end of story. That just can't be the way the law analyzes this.
I would agree with Your Honor that certainly what the children want isn't the controlling, but I think it is, and the court does give, and the court below gave, substantial deference to the preferences of the children, because that's what the court has been instructed by the legislature and by this court, that the core issue in any custody determination is the best interest of the children.
And sure, but the parents' interests are yoked to the children's.
Indeed. I would say that in this instance, what you have is, certainly you have a parent with primary custody, and that has certain rights and obligations, provide a home, make the day-to-day decisions for the child. But when you're talking about changing school districts, changing environments, changing everything, that is certainly imposing what I think it would be very difficult to not call a substantial change of circumstances affecting the welfare. Maybe better, maybe not. What that does then is trigger, we need to look at custody entirely. Because as this court said in Rivera v. Rivera and certainly in Reynolds v. Reynolds, a determination of modifying, changing, terminating visitation is co-equal with any sort of determination that changes custody. Whether it be changing from primary custody to visitation to joint custody, the standard is the same. That court made that very clear in Reynolds. When you're going to modify, and of course the court there said, the custodial parent cannot unilaterally change visitation. If the change is wanted and a change is going to be imposed, that person has an obligation to go to the court, establish change circumstances, and show that the desired change is in the best interest of that child. And I believe that is why there isn't a need for an entirely new standard. This court has already established the standard. When you are moving so far that it is impossible to comply with a court-ordered visitation schedule, and of course in Reynolds the court also was very careful to ensure that, to comment that that schedule has already predetermined by a final order what is in the best interest of those children. In this instance, the court has determined in a final order the best interest of those children were to have weekly visitations with their mother. It is, so at that point, it is incumbent on the party seeking to force the change, move to Reno. And I don't dispute that pursuing education is certainly a good thing, but you can get a mechanical engineering degree in Las Vegas. And the evidence in front of below was that, yes, UNR does have an interdisciplinary program where an engineering student can take some classes in nanotechnology. There was no evidence that those classes aren't there as well. It may not be a formal program. It's also true the record reflects that Mr. Shaner has not been admitted to that program. In fact, he would not be admitted until 2 years into his career. And it may very well be that that is something he is interested in. But as the court said in Schwartz, there are obligations, there are burdens when you become the primary custodian parent. And those weighing, the balancing is not only just the interest of the custodial parent, the physical custodial parent, but also the interest of the child and the interest of the non-custodial parent. And in this instance, the record simply didn't reflect that he could not get his mechanical engineering degree. And that is what the record says he was admitted. He was admitted into a mechanical engineering program. He could have certainly done that at UNLV. He also certainly could have, but we don't know because the record is not there, whether or not there's, as the court commented in Flynn v. Flynn, which is a very similar situation, interstate transfer, where the custodial parent wanted to go to out of state to attend school. The court below and the court here had no trouble affirming, saying, looking at it all, simply wanting to go to school where you could get substantially the equivalent of education. The court there acknowledged it may have to be video, maybe internet courses to get the same. When you drill down to what is in the best interest of the child, that is really what needs to be determined, and that move was not allowed. As my time's running out, I want to turn to what the district court did, because there's no doubt that the order entered by the court certainly could have had more findings and should have had more findings. I do believe, if the court looks at the record, though, the standard applied is consistent with the standard that this court would have applied in Reynolds or Rivera when you're looking at a change in custody, a change in visitation, and that the district court did, in fact, albeit struggling with two unrepresented parties who are often going into issues that perhaps were not as pertinent to the issues before the court as they could have been, did go through looking at the pertinent considerations of NRS 125-4804.
Please point to me in the record how we can make that determination.
I don't have the page site in front of me, but at the end of the hearing, the judge did go through and give an explanation of what she thought were the considerations here, some of which being, first of all, the interests of the children. There's no doubt the judge gave that great deference in the preferences of the children, but I don't think the judge only thought about that. The judge was also concerned with, which as we, even the interstate decisions say, is one of the core issues, is can the relationship be preserved with some form of alternate visitation? And the court certainly considered the financial abilities of these two parties, and the issue of how were they going to continue the same relationship of weekly visitation. This is not...
Well, but wait, you just said a moment ago alternate visitation, and now you're saying the same weekly visitation. And that's one of the things the court seemed to have just not thought about.
I think the court certainly dealt with it in a very shorthanded manner, Your Honor.
I appreciate you're in a difficult position here, I know.
I don't think that the court, I think if you look at the record, I do believe the court did have issues with that simply because the idea of driving, and again, would alternate visitation present the same? Let's talk about that, because one of the proposals that Mr. Shaner provided was, well, the children would move with me and stay with me during the school year, and we can expand the visitation during the summer. Well, it was interesting because Mr. Shaner, one of his primary reasons he felt that Reno was a much better place was because the climate was much cooler, which it is. I don't dispute that. But it is very interesting that his proposed alternate visitation would be to have the children, who have always lived in a very warm environment in the desert, go to Reno during the coldest time of the year, and then in the summer, go to Las Vegas during the warmest time of the year, where a mother, which the record shows, enjoys many activities with her children, a lot of them outdoor activities, where it would be curtailed because it's just too hot to go to the park. It's just too hot to go skating. So what you have here is the proposed alternate visitation schedule is directly contradictory to one of the reasons why he wishes to move his children to Reno, which is you don't get the benefit of the climates. In fact, if you opened up the idea of custody entirely, it may very well be everyone would be best if the children lived in Las Vegas in the mild winters and visited an extended period with the father during the mild summers. The court did apply the correct standard, and I believe the record certainly provides enough evidence and enough information for the court to conclude there was substantial evidence so that the court did not abuse its discretion in determining the best interest of the children was to maintain the visitation schedule in place. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Kennedy. Ms. Doyle, you have about 3 minutes and 16 seconds.
Thank you, Your Honor. Just because it was the last thing raised, I'm just going to address the cooler climate. And my client actually testified that he wanted to teach his kids how to ski. So spending the winters in Reno would actually be very beneficial to that. And perhaps I am wrong, and certainly the record doesn't have any evidence of this, but I assume that any ice skating in Las Vegas would be indoors, whether it's winter or summer, and the heat wouldn't actually be a barrier to skating. Your Honors, all of that aside, you touched on whether or not the kids should just get to decide. And it's important to note that a child's preference, a child of suitable age, and we refer to it as teenage discretion, but it's simply one element that's considered in evaluating the best interests of a child. And furthermore, in this case, despite their verbal skills, despite their maturity, the children weren't asked about the proposed move. The interviews talk about the relationship and they talk about whether you like mom and dad or are you scared of living in either place, but they don't discuss, are you excited to move to a new place? Are you excited to attend a new school? Your Honor, I come from a military family. I know that a lot of people do. If the kid's preference in whether or not you were going to move was the primary consideration, no one would ever move.
I think they have a different standard for military kids.
Your Honor, I also wanted to address the argument that the district court applied the correct standard. Respondent has argued that the district court applied Ellis versus Carucci, which is the standard for modification of custody. But I can find nowhere in the record where the court asked my client to demonstrate that there were changed circumstances, where the district court actually took into consideration any of the evidence that my client presented about the potential change and the benefits to the children's welfare. Indeed, as the court pointed out, the district court simply said, if you can't prove that it's in their best interest to spend less time with their mother, I'm not going to allow you to move. Well, there was no evidence that it would be less time. There was no evidence that reasonable alternate visitation was not available. The district court simply relied on those interviews and said, we're not going to change this. The respondent has made a lot of arguments about stability, and I hearken back to the military families. The stability at issue here is who's there when you wake up in the morning and go to school, and who is there when you go to sleep at night. That primary physical custodian, in conclusion, is the stability. That family that you form is the stability that the court should protect. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you, Mr. Kennedy, Ms. Doyle, thank you for your briefing and your arguments here today. The matter will stand submitted.